For the first time in 9 years, there are no Americans fighting in Iraq. 4 years ago, I promised to end the war in Iraq. We did. 4 years ago, I promised to end the war in Iraq. I did. You know, 4 years ago, I promised to end the war in Iraq, and I did. I told you we'd end the war in Iraq. We did. I said we'd end the Iraq war. We did. I told you I'd end the war in Iraq, and we did. I ended the war in Iraq as I promised. In 2008, I promised we'd end the war in Iraq. We've ended it. I was able to keep my promise and end the war in Iraq. In 2008, I promised we would end the war in Iraq, and we've ended it. The war in Iraq is over. The war in Iraq is over from ending the war in Iraq. That's why I ended the war in Iraq. The first time in 9 years, there are no Americans fighting in Iraq.
President, do you have any second thoughts about pulling all ground troops out of Iraq?
You know what I just find interesting is the degree to which this issue keeps on coming up. As if this was my decision.
Radio Free V-Dot.
This is a pirate transmission from District 13 with a message.
Radio Free Readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Welcome to episode 1517, the John Jacob Schmidt Show here at Radio Free Redoubt, bringing you truth and encouragement, hope and inspiration and information. And tonight, a little bit of education. We've got the underground. We are going to be talking about, we're going to be introducing this topic, which I've been saying that I'm going to for the last couple of weeks. And so we are going to get into that tonight, and I'm looking forward to that. And I apologize to our Sunday Night Live listening audience at 8 p.m. We had some technical difficulties with a internet cable, and then the stream not connecting and fighting that and stressing out over it. So anyway, it's just one of those, you have to accept, tonight's going to be a late night. It's one of those nights, but that's okay. We're all here. We're here now, right? Okay, because I've got a lot of material to cover, I want to make sure I've got enough time to do it. So I'm going to move right along here. I want to remind you guys about the God and Country Celebration. Go to marblecountry.com to learn more. That's the event that's going to be held between July 3rd through the 5th, Friday through Sunday, in Marble, Washington. Go to marblecountry.com, get the information, including driving directions, lots of activities there, workshops, strategic briefings, a lot of activities for the kids, families, bonfires, fireworks. It's going to be good stuff. And black powder shooting. Great stuff. If you get your tickets by June 10th, coming up, you get a 20% discount on your registration and your camping fees. So go to marblecountry.com to pre-register. Want to see you guys there. We're going to be there. It's going to be a lot of fun. All right, let's get into the news and commentary. Brought to you by Glenn Tate and the 299 Days book series about the collapse and the rebuilding. Right out the gate, One News Now. This was a cool story that I picked up. Israel's top diplomat recently used the authority of the Bible to incite other Israeli diplomats to stand by Israel's claim to its land. That's not even possible, is it? Can they use the Bible? Can they use the Bible to make the case that Israel belongs to the Israelis? This is unheard of. I mean, this claim hasn't been made for 2,000 years. Interesting. Israel Deputy Foreign Minister Tzipi Hotovli stressed that the officials should never apologize when explaining to other nations that it has a moral right to the Holy Land, including the West Bank, which was formerly Judea and Samaria. She said that Hotovli reportedly also appealed to an acclaimed Bible scholar from centuries ago to prove her point and instill a new boldness in her colleagues when discussing Israel's claim to its highly contested land in the Middle East. During her presentation, Hotovli quoted an analysis by the famous 11th century biblical commentator Rashi. Really interesting that they even consider that, but it's really picking up speed how they're actually using the Bible to make their case. Things aren't looking so good over on our side of the pond. Democrats now are calling on Obama, who I'm sure is going to be all too willing, to resettle 65,000 Syrian refugees. This is coming from The Hill just a few days ago, May 27th. A group of Senate Democrats is urging the Obama administration to allow at least 65,000 refugees from Syria to settle inside the United States. This group of Democrats, led by Senator Minority Whip Dick Durbin, Democrat, Illinois. There's three strikes. The group letter noted, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees wants to resettle 130,000 Syrian refugees over the next 2 years and has thus far submitted more than 12,000 resettlement cases to the United States for consideration. Oh, we'll consider it. Yeah, bring them all in. Amazing. We've been following this stuff. We've been following this stuff closely, but there is a voice of reason. A Republican out of Texas who is actually the House Homeland Security Committee Chairman, Michael McCaul, called the resettlement effort a serious mistake because of the security risks it poses. Amen to that. Don't let up on that message that it is a serious security risk. It's an existential danger to our country because where they're settling them, these refugees, increasingly, it is in red voting districts in rural America. They are fundamentally transforming what used to be the United States of America. It still is on the maps, but it's not the America that our founding fathers knew. It's not the same America that my grandfather came to from Scotland. Completely different nation now. Isn't this something? Oh, the new nationwide crime wave. Consequences of the Ferguson effect are already appearing. It's got a name now, the Ferguson effect. The main victims of growing violence will be the inner city poor. Well, and the main instigators of the growing violence are the inner city poor. So how's that for you? Change your headline there. Well, let's read on. I picked this up out of the Wall Street Journal. The Wall Street Journal. The nation's two decades long crime decline may be over. Gun violence. Oh, here we go. Gun violence in particular. Not inner city gang violence. Not thug violence. Not racial violence. Well, it's not racial violence, actually. It's they're killing each other. But gun violence in particular is spiraling upward in cities across America. In Baltimore, the most pressing question every morning is how many people were shot the previous night? Gun violence is up more than 60% compared with this time last year, according to the Baltimore police, with 32 shootings over Memorial Day weekend. Sounds like Mogadishu. May has been the most violent month the city has seen in 15 years. This is not a gun violence issue. This is a violence issue. You take all the guns away, if you could. And by the way, keep in mind, where this gun violence is spiraling upward happens to be in the same municipalities who have the strictest gun control laws. But if you could take all the guns away, then you would have stabbings up 60% compared with this time last year. How many people were stabbed the previous night would be the question you'd be asking. Ask the people in London how that worked out. Yeah, take all the guns away. See what happens. Well, criminals still get guns, and then stabbings went up. Interesting. Here is another smoke and mirrors story. The Senate moves toward limiting the NSA bulk data collection. Well, everybody's, what's the word? They're acting. They are, charades. Charades. Surveillance powers lapse with no deal in the Senate. Well, at first you think, wow, this is wonderful. They cannot spy on us anymore. And that's what the headlines are going to read tomorrow, right? We know that's what they're going to read. I can't wait to see the news tomorrow to see how it reads. Because this just broke. You know, they couldn't make their deal by midnight. And since I was running late because of the technical difficulties, I actually got to catch this as it's coming in. The National Security Agency lost its authority at midnight to collect Americans' phone records in bulk after GOP Senator Rand Paul stood in the way of extending the fiercely contested program in an extraordinary Sunday Senate session. Okay. Smoke and mirrors, people. And it's funny that they put this in here. But that program and several other post-September 11 counterterror measures look likely to be revived in a matter of days. With no other option, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, in an about-face, reluctantly embraced the House panel bill that would extend the anti-terror provisions while also remaking the bulk phone collections program. So they're going to be bringing it back, but all the headlines are going to, hey, you're safe now, Americans. They're not spying on you anymore. And lost their authority? How did they have the authority? They didn't have the authority to collect Americans' phone records in bulk in the first place. Well, maybe their supervisor told them that they could, but that doesn't give them the authority. A child whose parent says, go in and steal two candy bars, one for you, one for me. I'm authorizing you. Doesn't give that child authorization to go and steal two candy bars from the store. A person cannot tell a subordinate they are authorized to do something which is illegal. It violates the law, much less the highest law of the land, the Constitution. And it reads on. Although the lapse in the programs may be brief, intelligence officials warned that it could jeopardize Americans' safety and amount to a win for extremists. So they just said the program will likely be revived in a matter of days. So we've got this, them reporting intelligence officials are saying, oh, this little few days window that the Americans are free from spying, don't believe it. They're free from spying from the NSA for a few days. And in that time, we're jeopardizing Americans' safety. Well, first of all, I would rather be free than safe. I will take the risk. All right. I accept the risk. Just like riding a motorcycle without a helmet. You know the risks. You understand them. You're an adult. You face the consequences. If you go down, you bust your melon open. You understand the risks. You're free to make that decision. Well, when it comes to being spied on and having my personal data and information collected in bulk without a warrant, without being suspected of being a crime, committing a crime, it's illegal. And they never stop at just, well, we're just going to go this far. They inch their way forward. So no, I'd rather be free than safe. And what's interesting is they ended it with this. Intelligence officials warned that it could jeopardize American safety and amount to a win for extremists. Why did they use the word extremists? Who are we up against? Muslim, Islamic, jihadis, terrorists. But see, they didn't use the word terrorists. It could amount to a win for terrorists, or a win from Islamic extremists, or a win from Islamic jihadis. It was just extremists. And what are we seeing the narrative changing over to? Who's the extremists in this country? Who did Obama in their national security summit that they held a few months ago say the biggest threat besides climate change, what is the biggest domestic threat in the United States today? He said right-wing extremists. And here we have to spy on people because, well, if we don't, it'll be a win for extremists. These people, gotta watch them. Oh, let's see here. Let's go ahead and go right into this break and let's get Fox 519 on with the eye on the economy. Greece is about ready to melt down and the dominoes could start falling soon. So anyway, Fox 519 is going to give us the eye on the economy. And when we come back into segment two, we're going to start on the topic of probably a three-part series, The Underground, Past, Present, and Future. Right here on Radio Free Readout. We'll be back in just a few moments.
When disaster strikes, it's too late to prepare. PrepperRecon.com offers MOLLE-compatible individual first aid kits for your home, auto, or bug-out bag. These kits have everything you need to address a traumatic injury, including an Israeli battle dressing, quick clot, EMT shears, suture kit, Steri-Strips, tourniquet, ACS chest seal, tough strip bandages, gauze, and so much more. Kits are available in OD Green, Coyote, Black, and ACU. $89 includes shipping. To buy your individual first aid kit, go to PrepperRecon.com and click the store tab at the top of the homepage. Order today before it's too late.
This week, former House of Representatives Speaker Dennis Hassard was indicted on Thursday on federal charges, including lying to the FBI, relating to an alleged effort to hide $3.5 million in payments he was making to a person to conceal his past misconduct. The Illinois Republican, who left Congress in 2007, was charged with structuring the withdrawal of $952,000 in cash to evade the requirement that banks report cash transactions over $10,000 and lying to the FBI about those withdrawals. Now, Fox 519 is not endorsing what the former speaker did in the least bit, but it does represent a bigger problem. He is charged with withdrawing his own money and pulling out the money under $10,000 to report or to hide the reporting requirements. It's his money. He can do with it what he wants. He can pay off who he wants. It was his mistake and he needs to own that. But the fact that he was charged with lying to the FBI about using his own money is ridiculous. Heed my warning, everyone. As things progress further into economic chaos, the banks will be watching your withdrawals closer and closer. Just goes to my point that you need to keep cash, gold, and silver on hand, at home, and out of reach of the banksters. In other world financial news, it was reported by both IMF and Greek sources that Greece now has less than a week before it defaults on its June 5th payment to the IMF. It is a payment that it just can't simply make because it's run out of money. Now, Greece has two options to kick the can down the road again. One, of course, is to get the deal done in the coming 5 days with the IMF, although that is virtually impossible. The other is to bundle all the June payments into the last month, thus buying 3 additional weeks of time. However, if Greece manages to kick the can down the road for the nth time for the past 5 years, it certainly has a lot of cans to kick for the remainder of 2015. But there is another option, albeit a terrible decision that Greece may be forced to make, and it looks like they're going to. They're going to have to make a deal with the devil, the BRICS. In an article on the Greek financial website Ekinos.gr, Greek Energy Minister Panagiotis Lafanzas offered insight to the Greek financial future as they prepare to leave the euro and join with the BRICS. Here is the minister's quote. Greece is preparing and will probably submit a request to participate in the new development bank for the BRIC countries and has secured Russian support on the issue. During my meeting with the Deputy Finance Russian Minister Sergei Starchak, we secured the decisive Russian support to the Greeks' request for participation in the new development bank of the BRIC countries. The relevant request for Greece's participation will be symbolic During my meeting with the Russian Deputy Finance Minister, Sergei Storchek, we secured the decisive Russian support to the Greek request for participation in the new development bank of BRIC countries. Lafanzanis, however it's pronounced, added that the technical details were also discussed of how to submit the request and that it will be accepted after discussions within the Greek government conclude. That is a deal they'll have to make to kick that can down the road, and their country will suffer greatly for it. Yes, it may be a smart financial move in the short term, but ultimately it will continue to perpetuate the terrible debt position that Greece is in. My fellow patriots, Greece has to default to begin anew, just like we in America are going to have to do. A reset will pave the way for a free market to begin anew again. Be ready, everyone. Keep an eye on the economy and the financial news this week as we watch what happens with Greece. And again, what happens with your money in the banks. Thanks again for listening this week and for Eye on the Economy and Radio Free Readout. This is Fox 519 signing off. God bless.
Welcome back from the break. This is segment two here at the Voice of the American Readout. And this segment is brought to you by LoadedPantsHanger.com. Very good stuff. Hide your clothes in plain sight. Handguns, personal belongings, and even long guns in your closet, in your clothing. Really good stuff. And also, we've got, they're going to be offering a discount coming up real soon, starting next week, actually, 2 weeks out from Father's Day. They're going to be offering a discount just like they did right before Mother's Day. So we'll be telling you about that next week. All right. The underground. Why is this important? Actually, what are we talking about? Underground. That sounds criminal. Sounds nefarious. Sounds like something sneaky and probably illegal. Oh, the underground. Well, we're talking about the future, sometime in the future. Future in America? I mean, is it even necessary that we're talking about this? And what do you even mean when you say underground? So when we think of the underground, what comes to mind? You think of like World War II, partisans conducting hit-and-run operations, blowing up fuel depots, operating clandestine radio networks, and cutting the enemy's communications lines, right? I mean, you think of the underground resistance. That's what comes right to your mind. So is this relevant to citizens today? Well, it depends on which group of citizens you happen to be. And it depends on what we're talking about when we use the term underground. Because there are different ways to apply the term underground, and it has several connotations. So we'll start by using the proper context for the term in the way that it applies to this listening audience. And this audience is largely Christian, living in the United States and Canada. So before we put the underground into proper context for this discussion, let me address the auxiliary. Another term closely related to the underground is what is called the auxiliary. Now, that is the support network that ensures that those operating in the underground have what they need to accomplish the underground's mission or purpose. Now, since the two are so closely related and often overlap in their purpose and even their function, we'll cover the auxiliary later on in this series. The auxiliary is a term that's normally tied to a resistance movement, and almost always an armed resistance movement. And we're not dealing with that in our country. Of course, the future is uncertain, so we want to discuss it, especially since we see an increasing trend toward the demonization of certain segments of our culture by some government agencies and media, and anti-American, pro-globalist, pro-communist, so-called hate watch advocacy groups. Some of those so-called advocacy groups, which have weaseled their way into advisory and training positions being paid using your and my tax dollars to indoctrinate agencies within our government on who our nation's domestic terrorist threats are. Now, this indoctrination describes potential domestic terror threats to include, among others, so-called radical right-wing extremist conservatives, Christian extremists, constitutionalists, homeschoolers, those who are anti-abortion, pro-traditional marriage, anti-illegal immigration, those who talk about property rights issues, state sovereignty issues, those who fly flags from the American Revolutionary War, such as the famous Don't Tread on Me Gadsden flag, or those who vote for third-party candidates. And there's more. It's been well documented here at Radio Free Readout and countless others. And unless you've been living under a rock, it's what one might call common knowledge. So we'll put the auxiliary on hold for right now. Now, let's talk specifically about the underground. What is the underground? Now, if you go to the Webster's Dictionary definition of the underground, they have, of course, you know, under the surface of the earth, underground. But that's not what we're talking about. So, according to Webster's definition, it means in or into hiding or secret operation. A movement or group organized in strict secrecy among citizens, especially in an occupied country, for maintaining communications, popular solidarity, and concerted resistive action pending liberation. Bingo. Means a clandestine conspiratorial organization set up for revolutionary or other disruptive purposes, especially against a civil order. Not, we don't fit that definition. And another one, an unofficial, unsanctioned, or illegal, but informal movement or group, and then conducted by secret means. So let's look at this one, the number two definition, a group organized in strict secrecy among citizens, especially in an occupied country, for maintaining communications, popular solidarity, and concerted resistive action pending liberation. I think that that could actually be the definition that describes what we're talking about. We're not talking about the need for an underground in America today. So let's look at the underground yesterday, today, and tomorrow. It's part of our heritage, the underground. Although they didn't always call it that, during the American War for Independence, the Revolutionary War, it was the underground that made victory possible, that contributed greatly to victory. And it was effective right from the beginning. Let me just read a few paragraphs from Paul Revere's Midnight Ride. And as you're listening, see if this meets the definition of underground as defined by Webster's Dictionary. Organized in strict secrecy among citizens, conducted for maintaining communications, popular solidarity, and a concerted resistive action, pending liberation, while occupied by a hostile force, and with a hope for one day, liberation. Paul Revere was an adamant patriot and a strong supporter of John Hancock, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, and others during that time. Before his memorable ride, Revere also participated in the Boston Tea Party, where the Patriots threw British tea into the harbor. After being alerted by the arrival of ships and by troop movements, Paul and some companions, who had been meeting secretly at the Green Dragon Tavern in Boston, arranged their famous signal, and that was the signal, one by land and two if by sea, referring to lanterns in the North Church steeple in Boston. And the signal came the night of April 18, 1775, and Paul Revere rode gallantly through the streets of Massachusetts. It was prearranged for Revere to ride to Lexington to warn John Hancock and Samuel Adams when the British were to come. So when the fatal moment came, Revere jumped upon his steed and rode toward Lexington, but not without stopping. He stopped at every house and warned the people that the British were coming and warned them to prepare themselves. When he reached Lexington, he roused Adams and Hancock, and they escaped safely. Before he left, he was joined by another rider, William Dawes, set to do the same task. Together, the two of them decided to continue on to Concord. And Concord had hidden ammunition for the Continental Army. The citizens of Concord were part of the underground, hiding the ammunition that the British were coming to confiscate. On the way, they were joined by a rider named Samuel Prescott, also part of the underground, although they didn't call it that. They called them members of the Committees of Safety. Just before they reached Concord, they were intercepted by a British battalion, and all three were arrested. So, obviously, what they were doing was illegal. Prescott escaped very quickly. Oh, there you have eluding illegal. And continued on to Concord, bearing their message. Oh, there's aiding and abetting, illegal. Dawes escaped shortly after, more eluding, a modern-day felony in most states. Revere was held for a while, then he was released, in time to see the ending of the Battle of the Lexington Green. I would say that pretty much meets the definition of underground. And that's our heritage. Christian men defying the laws of an oppressive regime, aiding and abetting armed criminals, giving them advance warning so they could take up arms against the forces coming to disarm them. Aiding in the escape of key leadership figures who were wanted for arrest, eluding and even escaping themselves. All of what you just heard is part of the underground, made up of different moving parts that all contribute to the cause. Did you notice that Paul Revere wasn't mentioned as a war fighter, a militiaman? He was a patriot, a supporter, and a writer, a messenger. That is the role of someone in the auxiliary. Other patriots stood watch, ready to light lanterns as part of their communications, more accurately, signaling, part of their communications network. The watchers, lamplighters, the riders, all those would fall into the auxiliary. But all of them part of the underground. A secretive communications plan developed ahead of time to be implemented if there ever was a need. And there was. Then the riders went out in the night, warning their fellow patriots that the enemy was coming and to prepare themselves to fight the tyrant. Those were the militias. Those were the war fighters, the militia, the men of the military age, who had been training in advance and holding private meetings to discuss what course of action they would take and laying out tactical plans. This network was also part of the underground. When Revere reached Lexington, he alerted Samuel Adams and John Hancock. They weren't militia. They weren't part of the auxiliary conducting a communications or messenger system. They were part of the leadership portion of, you guessed it, the underground. The underground is the culmination of multiple hidden activities comprised of several moving parts, made up of a group of citizens working toward a common goal or purpose, and it's usually illegal at the time. Which is why we want to look at the criminal underground. No, we obviously don't condone criminal activity. Organized crime, human and drug smuggling, prostitution rings, money laundering, bank robbery, terrorism are all the banes of our society. And then there's your softer criminal underground activity, such as black markets, for example, where certain commodities are heavily taxed or even banned outright. And this will often create underground networks where there's a demand for something that the government's forbidden. For example, during the Prohibition period in America, when alcohol was produced and smuggled, or even less sinister, but illegal nonetheless, if you know where to go and who to talk to, you can find contraband Cuban cigars in the United States. Probably in the White House. In many parts of the U.S. where handguns are banned, you can still buy one for the right price, and if you're willing to run the risk. Of course, as a side note, the solution for that kind of nonsense is to move. Where firearms are banned, the social structure related to every other part of living there are so denigrated that it's not fit for any God-fearing, freedom-loving patriot to live anyway. And whether the activity is legal or illegal, the underground, as it were, is synonymous with resistance, bucking the system, going against the grain, non-conformance. The term underground doesn't always equate to breaking the laws, but rather the breaking away from cultural or social or industry norms. I mean, there's an underground music industry, an underground art culture, an underground nightlife, underground sports, and so on. So for Christians to be contemplating bucking the system or going against the grain and being nonconformist seems antithetical to our faith. I mean, we're conservative. We don't make waves. We don't break rules. And those that are in the habit of breaking the rules are the types that break laws, any law that they find to be an inconvenience, even the higher laws or the highest laws, God's law. So those in the underground are obviously doing something nefarious or socially unacceptable, and so the underground is no place for a Christian. Or is it? If you look in Romans 12:2, it says, "Be not conformed to this world, but be you transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is good, that is good, and acceptable and perfect will of God." Luke 12:51 says, "Do you think I came to bring peace on earth? No, I tell you, but division." That's Jesus talking. Romans 12:18 says, "If it be possible, as much as lies in you, as much as is possible, as much as within your ability, live peaceably with all men, if you can." Matthew 10:22 says, "And you shall be hated of all men for my name's sake, but he that endures to the end shall be saved." If they hate us, well, that means, well, we must be causing that because, you know, our Christian views. So we should try to make peace with them, and we should try to tone down our Christian views because we're supposed to make peace, right? No, Jesus came to bring division. And you're supposed to stand firm to the end. And we're not supposed to be conformed to this world. So we must endure to the end, and will be hated and persecuted. We are just now beginning to see this. Christians in America are being demonized and in some cases now criminalized for their faith. We've seen multiple business owners in America charged with crimes, fined, and their businesses shut down because they refused to provide services which violated their moral conscience. In a country founded on the principle of religious liberty. In the American Redoubt, one pastor was advised by the city prosecuting attorney when he asked. They said, "Yes, if you refuse to perform a homosexual so-called wedding, you will be in violation of our city's non-discrimination ordinance," which was a misdemeanor, a crime, punishable by up to 6 months in jail, plus fines. Of course, after intense pressure, the city changed its mind, and for now, the anti-Christian sentiment in this country is growing. and the God-haters are becoming increasingly bold and advancing an agenda and laws which are essentially slowly criminalizing Christians for following their faith. In fact, in Canada, in some places, it's a crime, a violation of hate crime laws, to teach that certain behaviors are wrong and sinful, which are stated clearly as such in the Bible. Now, the one thing that Christians are painfully slow to recognize is that this isn't a temporary trend that will soon just run its course, where one day we can soon go back to teaching and speaking truth and living out our faith and all the world will be bliss again. There's some changes coming to our country. And so we need to think about those things and where we're going to stand on those issues and some things that might be required of us. So we're going to talk about that when we come back in segment 3 at the Radio Free Redoubt Studio A, coming at you. We'll be back in a minute.
Hi, I'm Chris Walsh, broker and owner of Revolutionary Realty, based in the heart of America's Great Redoubt, North Idaho. Every day, I sell homes and land to bankers, doctors, economists, scientists, military folks, and more for good reason. They all know what's coming and want to secure safety and peace for their family. They've done the research and discovered that North Idaho's superior environment, food insecurity, surrounded by more like-minded patriots than anywhere in America. At www.revrealty.us, you can read stories about North Idaho's weather, spring development, growing food, solar, and alternative energy. Additionally, every article has a beautiful quote from the brilliant mind of Thomas Jefferson. We also give you free access to our listings, so feel free to browse our inventory or fill out our short form, and we'll do the searching for you. Call a revolutionary today at 208-667-1776 or visit us online at revrealty.us. That's www.revrealty.us, and God bless you.
Hi, everyone. This is John Jacob Schmidt, here to tell you about the 299 Days book series by lawyer and author Glenn Tate. Follow him through his real-life story of transitioning from middle-aged, unprepared suburbanite to full-blown prepper, tactical team member, and provider and protector of his family. Then let Glenn take you on a wild ride through the collapse, community building, resistance against a corrupt system, and the rebirth of a new one. Go to 299days.com to learn more. We are going into segment 3 now, which is brought to you by Selkirk Mountain Real Estate for you relocating to the American Redoubt in the northernmost part of the panhandle of Idaho. Go to selkirkmountainrealestate.com and they will help you get situated. And hey, another thing too, for your prepper-minded folks, I want to remind you that Survival Stores is available with their 419 systems or at 419systems.com. And that is a computerized, it is a software program to help you with your inventory and your preps for rotating. It's got a lot of features to it. It's just a great, great program. Go check that out at 419systems.com. Because, hey, just having your preparedness items is not necessarily being prepared. So organize it so you know what you have and you know where it is. Now, before we went into the break, we were just talking about kind of the state of the situation that we're in our country, about how Christians are just acting like this is a temporary trend, the anti-Christian sentiment that's really growing in our country. Now, there is a time in history when Christians in America will have a choice to make. And they'll have three options, in my estimation. Either conform to the pattern of this world,
the standards of this world and compromise on their faith and only teach and follow what the state and society approves of. Or option two, ignore the state and the demands of society, facing prosecution and confiscation of property by the state and hateful attacks and death threats from society. Or three, go underground. Now, when that time comes, it will be illegal. But we'd be following the footsteps of those who've gone before us. And now we hail as heroes. There's other examples in the Bible. Rahab in the Bible took the Israelite spies in, hid them when they went into Jericho to bring back intelligence so that they could prepare for an attack on the city. Now, when the king in Jericho found out about it, he sent troops to Rahab's house where she hid the spies on the rooftops and diverted the soldiers, telling them, oh, the two guys, they left. But if you take off right after him, go after him now, you'll catch up with them probably. And then she made a deal with the spies. She hid him out up on the rooftop, and then at dark, she made a deal with them. Because I helped you, you swear to me that when you come and take Jericho, you'll spare my family. And so they made the deal with her. And she helped them escape. And she was spared, and her whole family was. Everyone in her household was spared. She became part of the Israeli underground, aiding and abetting spies. Something she likely would have been killed for if caught. And she's listed in the New Testament in the Hall of Faith. In Exodus, the Egyptian Pharaoh gave the clear command to two Hebrew midwives that they were to kill all male Jewish babies. Now, they disobeyed the Pharaoh because it says they feared God and did not do as the king of Egypt had commanded them. Now, if they would have been found out to have directly disobeyed the Pharaoh, they would have been killed. So who did they fear more? God or man? So they let the boys live. The Bible goes on to say that the midwives lied to the Pharaoh about why they were letting the children live. Yet even though they lied and disobeyed their government, God was good to the midwives and the people multiplied and became very mighty. Because of the midwives feared God, he established households for them. That's what it says. That chapter in 1 Kings 18 introduces a man named Obadiah who feared the Lord greatly. When the queen Jezebel was killing God's prophets, Obadiah took 100 of them, the other prophets, and hid them from her so that they could live. Such an act was in clear defiance of the ruling authorities, witches. So, they went underground. He was part of the auxiliary. He was hiding prophets that Queen Jezebel was having killed. They went underground. He hid them. They developed a safe house network, and they developed an underground. In 2 Kings, the only apparently approved revolt against a reigning government official is recorded. With Athaliah, the mother of Ahaziah, began to destroy the royal offspring of the house of Judah. However, Joash, the son of Ahaziah, was taken by the king's daughter and hidden from Athaliah so that the bloodline would be preserved. 6 years later, Jehoiada gathered men around him, declared Joash to be king, and put Athaliah to death. So, that's a lot of difficult names. Keep track. Who said what? Who did what? There was somebody who was trying to kill all the royal offspring, and the sister the daughter took and hid this individual who would later become king, went underground, created a safe house network for 6 years. In the last century, during World War II, we've learned of countless examples of underground networks which hid Jews, Christians, political dissidents, Allied soldiers, airmen, and agents, risking their own lives in defiance of tyrannical laws, tyrannical rulers. They mastered the art of secret underground tradecraft operating clandestine communications networks, safe house networks, food and other logistical support networks, and secret meetings, as well as passive and active resistance activities. Now, let's come forward to time to today. Not in America. There's no need for the underground churches today, right? At least not yet. But if we pay attention to the writings on the wall, we can see that the necessity for an underground church is on the radar and is inbound at an accelerated rate. So let's break away from talking about the underground in terms of resistance, at least in the terms of armed resistance. There are full-blown armed resistance movements that Christians are involved in right now in Africa and Asia. And remember, to keep these guys in your prayers, because they're up against unspeakable evil forces. In Iraq, in areas that have fallen to ISIS, Christians are either fleeing, fighting, or in hiding. ISIS is the government and the law of the land in parts of Syria and Iraq. So should Christians submit to those governments? I mean, after all, they're the ruling governing bodies in those areas. Absolutely not. Well, it's not an official government, you say. They're just criminals, terrorists. So what makes a government? United Nations recognition. What makes a government is when a civil body politic forms, has operational control of an area, and governs all aspects of the land, economics, trade, military, and the judicial and legal components. The people don't have to like it to be under that government. The United Nations doesn't have to give its stamp of approval. I assure you, the people living in that region will testify, ISIL is the government, and more. Just as sure as the Taliban was the government of Afghanistan, regardless of the arguments against its legality, legitimacy, or its commitment to human rights, the government is the ruling body that makes policy combined with the ability to enforce that policy. Because there are pastors that are saying you shouldn't resist government. Any government anybody that just says, I'm over you now, I'm over you, I rule you. Oh, okay. You just submit to anybody who comes along and says, I now am in charge of you. I rule over you. Because if you're going to follow that to the letter, then all Christians have to submit to all the laws and all the rules of the Taliban, right? Or ISIS. Now, we're just blessed enough that in America, we have a government formed by men who pledged to join in compact with each other to fight to establish a nation ruled by the people. Now, it's been corrupted, it's been perverted, but it's taken 200 years to come to this point, which is more than we can say for China, Somalia, Iraq, Syria, Turkey, Afghanistan, Nigeria, Egypt, Libya, Iran, and the list goes on and on. In those countries, there is an active underground church. And there are lessons to be learned, because once again, as history has proven, necessity is the mother of invention. And out of necessity, Christians have had to invent and perfect the underground. Why? Because their lives and livelihoods depend on it. And you know something else? History also shows that persecution, regardless of how painful it is good for the church. I believe that persecution of the church in the West, particularly in America, is just what we need. We're going to talk about that and also a remnant when we come back. This is the Voice of the American Redoubt. Stay right there.
This is Matt Shea with your daily news commentary, the way I see it. Well, it's cutoff time in the legislature, and it's time to take score. Once again, the freedom agenda has far surpassed expectations. In fact, we've done better in the last 3 months than we did in the last 2 years combined. Out of 80 freedom agenda bills, we had 52 receive hearings, 12 were voted out of the House or Senate, and by building coalitions around issues of principle, we had over 72 Democrat co-sponsors. We also had 30 national news stories as well. And now we have a coalition of Western states working together for lower taxes, less government, and more freedom. We even stopped the push for mandatory vaccines and more gun control. Look at what we can do together in the pursuit of freedom. We can quite literally change the direction of our state. So visit Freedom Agenda Washington on Facebook to find out how you can help. At least, that's the way I see it. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for listening. Paid for by the Committee-elect Matt Shea Republican.
This is Shan Hemphill with Works LLC. We provide lifetime guaranteed holsters and magazine carriers for the armed citizen. Check us out at werkz.com or call 855-WORKS01 for your custom gear needs. Don't forget to use coupon RFR at checkout for 15% off. Thank you and God bless.
We are back. Segment 4 at the Voice of the American Redoubt. Don't forget, you can contact me at johnjacob@radiofreeredoubt.com. And if you're listening out there to the streaming, maybe a CD that somebody gave you, an audio file someone sent you, you can go to radiofreeredoubt.com. That's where we're streaming out of, and that's where all of our archived podcasts are uploaded to or available from. There's actually a link to Podbean, our Podbean site, where we actually have all of our audio files sitting and linked over to from radiofreeredoubt.com. But anyway, this segment is brought to you by Katie Armour. Don't forget to use the coupon code JohnJacob to get your discount. They have soft armor and t-shirts out now, and also that includes free shipping on everything. And their current production lead time is less than a week. That's really cool. They've made some huge improvements, and they've got the AR-500 level 3 and level 4 frag coated armor. So good stuff, Patriots. Go out there and check them out. KatieArmor.com. Now, right before we went into the break, I was talking about persecution of the church in the West, in America. Maybe that's what we need. I mean, where the church is persecuted, it thrives. And where it is persecuted, I'm talking to Christians right now. A lot of this underground stuff, it's going to apply to you no matter what your faith is. But right now I'm kind of laying the foundation here because, well, it's the Christians that are being hacked to death and hunted down and persecuted all over the country, all over the world. It's the Christians is the fastest growing group, the most, up and coming, the group that is experiencing the most persecution right now, increasingly, are Christians. So that's why we're addressing this from that perspective. Now, where the church is persecuted, it thrives. And where it is persecuted, the true church is underground. Underground in defiance of tyranny, despite laws banning their existence, and at great risk. They're operating like organized criminal drug cartels operate, with special attention given to secrecy and security. They vet their members. They conduct communications and safe house networks. They have security elements, logistics, and food distribution networks, smuggling networks for smuggling contraband items such as Bibles, CDs, tapes, printed materials, pastors, missionaries, soldiers, diplomats. They have printing presses, clandestine messengers, drivers, pilots. They have encryption, computer, and IT specialists and spies. All underground. Networked. Illegal. Christian criminals. That's real life. Right now, today, while you're polishing your Harley Davidson and your only care in the world is which RV you're going to buy when your youngest is finally out of the house. Because persecution only happens over there. It'll never come here. And you can't wait till Obama's out of the White House because all the problems in America are going to vanish when Marco Rubio is president. Meanwhile, you're listening to fat, dumb, and happy pastors telling you that the Bible tells you to obey the government no matter what. Because they haven't had their families ripped apart, the children taken by the authorities to be re-educated, and they themselves hauled off to the gulag for 17 years of torture and isolation and starvation. Ignorance is bliss. Well, I'm not ignorant, so pardon me if my view of the world isn't rose-colored. I'm paying attention to what's going on around us, and I can see it closing in. It's not a doom and gloom message. Our hope is in Him, and we win in the end. But while we're here, there's a bigger picture. He's going to protect a remnant. He always has. And His remnant in the Bible and in history always seems to end up coming out of the ashes after having gone underground, either hiding or fighting or both. Or some of the remnant just happened to survive captivity and live to tell their story. I'm paying attention to history because my experience shows that the wisest men that I know of, whoever lived, all of them implore us to learn from history. That you can tell the future by looking at history. So when comparing history to the current conditions in our culture, our nation today, tells me we have a lot of work to do and we're living on borrowed time. If you look at the indicators from history and the wise counsel is telling us, look at history, you'll tell what's coming in the future. Unfortunately, most won't heed the warnings. They'll just have to adjust under fire. They'll learn. They'll come around. The ones who won't capitulate or compromise or give in. But we can benefit tomorrow if we start thinking about it today. And maybe that's what we need. Maybe that's exactly what we need. Where is the church growing at the highest rate? There's a lot of documentation out there that shows and supports this, basically corroborates this. Let me give you a rundown of the top 10 countries where the church is growing the most in the world, the fastest rate of growth in the Christian church. Number one is Nepal, mostly a Hindu nation. .1% Christians in 1970. In 2020, estimated 3.8%. 10% increase. Doubling every 6 years. Number two, China. Non-religious. Communist. It says non-religious, but that's not true. It's communist. And trust me, communists, that is their religion. The number three nation, the United Arab Emirates. 4, Saudi Arabia. 5, Qatar. 6, Oman. 7, Yemen. 8, Mongolia. 9, Cambodia. 10, Bahrain. Hindu, non-religious, Muslim, 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 Buddhist, Buddhist, Muslim. Those are the top 10 countries where Christianity is expanding the fastest. Doubling every six, well, on average, doubling about every 8 years, if you average all those countries out. And each of these countries have two things in common. One, Christians are being persecuted. Two, the church is doubling in size in an average of about 8 years. While in America, the land of liberty, where we can worship freely, a nation founded on the principles of religious liberty, the church is in decline and a significant portion of it is an apostate church, adopting and advancing doctrines which are clearly in contradiction to the Bible. The church in America is ready, ripe for persecution. Yeah, there's evil forces out there, I know, but I submit that it might just be the Lord orchestrating it for the edification of the church, to build it and to strengthen it, to make it pure and presentable for the groom. Scrape off the impurities. Bring it. I don't know. I'm not a biblical scholar. I'm a former soldier, military, contractor guy, communications, radio operator, who just has a heart for God. And God's mind is a mystery to me. My highest thoughts are childish to him. I'm just saying the world's changing and we've been exempt from true hardship. And I feel in my gut that this season of prosperity and bliss are coming to an end at some point. And Christians in America who truly fear God more than man need to start not just thinking about it, but start taking action. So now the foundation's laid. Next week, we're going to talk about action. What actions can we start taking now and what planning we should be doing today to be as effective as we can be tomorrow? What discussions should be taking place among our like-minded fellow patriots? You don't want to be a remnant. It's not fun. But you don't want to not be a remnant. That'll be even less fun when it's all said and done. So, anyway, blessings to you all. Go dust off your Bible, clean your M4, charge the batteries on your radios, make sure your quick clot doesn't have any pinholes in the packaging. Pray for your pastor to wake up. Praise God if your pastor's awake. Kiss your wife, punch your teenagers, and keep your gas tank full. This is the Voice of the American Redoubt, and I'll talk to you next week. Good night.